Klimaschutz am Kühne Climate Center in Nairobi in Kenia. Sie hat auch schon praktische Erfahrungen gemacht, E-Mobilität in Kenia einzuführen. Und der Titel ihres Vortrags ist nicht nur Fahrzeuge, sondern eine Vision, Transport in Afrika neu denken.
So, I'm going to tell you a story. My slides will show you what the framework looks like, but the story is the most important thing to remember. And it's my story with mobility. So in 2020, March, COVID kicked in, and Kenya went into something called a lockdown. We as Kenyans didn't understand what it was. We didn't understand COVID. All we knew was we were told no more moving in public in groups. You can only move by yourself. But what that did was within 2 days, Kenya had cleared up. The skies were clear. I lived 250 kilometers away from Mount Kenya. And from my sitting room, I could see Mount Kenya. I won't tell you how old I am, but I had never seen Mount Kenya from that far. And then I forgot about it, but I thought, this is amazing. If cars don't move, this is how clean the environment would look like. And then you forget. And a few months later, two Dutchmen somehow found me in the privacy of my home, and they said, we want to start selling bicycles in Kenya. And my response to them was, bicycles are a poor man's mode of transportation, and if you see a rich man on it, he's trying to exercise. And they said, no, not the bicycle you're used to. We want to do electric bicycles. And I said to them, the biggest problem I have with that is if I can't convince my grandmother to ride a bicycle, how am I going to convince her to ride an electric bicycle? And they said, that is the dream. Kenyans have the body to run, so they should be able to cycle. That's not me, but most Kenyans can run. And that's what my journey with mobility started, micro-mobility started. So the aim was, let's try and figure out how we're going to sell electric bicycles in Kenya. So the problem was we were innovative. We knew what we wanted to do, but the process was we didn't own the infrastructure, we didn't own the policy. So we started to try and figure out how do we make these changes. All I'm doing is I'm trying to sell an electric bicycle. And when I try to interact with the government does not want to deal with a private business person. And they were very clear about it. They were like, we're not going to make any changes for private companies. So we thought to ourselves, I thought to myself, well, I need to find other people who are like me and try and figure out how are we going to talk to the government so that stuff like infrastructure and stuff like policy starts to make sense for this changing thing that we're calling mobility. And that's where EMAC was born. EMAC stands for Electric Mobility Association of Kenya. We were three very crazy people. One was trying to sell electric buses for the rapid bus system that was eventually supposed to come back if COVID ever ended. And another one was trying to sell electric motorbikes with the idea that we can still move on a motorbike and we don't have to carry passengers. So as we started to think about it, we started to wonder who else is going through the same thing and how does this structure that's called EMAC begin to change the way government behaves or reacts with private sector. And that's where it became crazy. We found other people who were doing the same things we were doing and had faced the exact same barriers we had faced. And we thought to ourselves, if we can bring all of these people together, then we have a voice. We have the ability to speak to government and the ability to change the way mobility is. Now, if you've been to Africa, Africa is still building roads. Africa is still building a lot, infrastructure. We are still in the process of building. But one of the things we found out was that if you looked at the plans that had been designed before I was born, none of those designs talked about things like cycling lanes. And we thought to ourselves, can a private company build a cycling lane? The answer is actually no. It is the mandate of a government. If we wanted to import these very expensive electric bicycles, we needed the government to understand that it was not the rich who were going to buy them only. Even the poor should be able to do that. So we started asking for things like incentives. So what does an incentive look like? And the government would come back to us and say, if we give you these incentives, what do we get back in exchange? And it became dialogue. It became dialogue that helps governments to understand that in change, when you are doing infrastructure, when you're doing policy, there are things which a private sector will come up with so fast that you need to keep up with. And these changes are important because these are the changes that help build the cities of the future. And these decisions that you're making now have to last maybe another 100 years. Now, most of us in the room at that point were like, we'll not be alive. And typical African fashion is you're building for what you think you will be able to see because that's part of your legacy, and your legacy dies when you die. So the aim was to try and make sure that everything we build is robust. So EMAC became that change factor for governments, for the government. So some of the things that came that we... The other problem we had was we wanted instant gratification. That's always the problem with private sector. Private sector wants to see the benefits now. So in 2023, one of the things that came out really fast was we were able to get incentives on VAT, import, input and output VAT, which means that any electric bicycles that came into the country would be less 16%, and the selling price would also be less 16%, which meant the cost of the bicycle would come down by 32%. Now, that doesn't... For us, it was a big win, especially for me when I heard it on the news. I almost fell off my chair because I thought to myself, first of all, the government of Kenya is talking about electric bicycles. Oh, my God. They know what a bicycle is, and they understand my plight. And then I have a 32% discount. Oh, my God, I've actually moved the pin. And that's how we all felt. So me with my micro-mobility and my other two partners with their buses and their motorbikes, we were all super excited because it meant we had done something really crazy. The bigger change was in how much we saw that growth just shoot through the roof. Now, this was just, bicycles are not registered in Kenya, and the reason being is because we felt we didn't want them to pay taxes on the movement. It is a bicycle. But bicycles are double the amount of registered vehicles in Kenya, which are now electric. And that alone was super crazy because as we were seeing these benefits come through, the other thing was we were able to create jobs. So now the question was, we've created these jobs, we are seeing these benefits, but there's no infrastructure. So how do you ensure that with the policy changes, infrastructure goes hand in hand? The beauty about it is there are places we can go to visit that have not had to build new cycling lanes. So when I travel in some of these very nice countries like Austria, I see the road is one. But on that same road, there is a tram, there is a bicycle lane, there is a car lane, and there are parking spots. So bringing our politicians to Europe was really nice because what did they get? We took them to the Netherlands. So in the Netherlands, they saw roads that were very old, made of bricks, but on these roads, all of this was working hand in hand. So guess what we did when we went back home? They took exactly the same roads, and on those roads, they created cycling lanes. So now Nairobi has 500 kilometers of cycling lanes for jobs for about 750 cyclists using electric bicycles. So those are some of the benefits, the instant gratification we were looking for. And then we began to understand the importance of EMAC. EMAC was going to be that organization that had no, that had no attachments to any particular person, but was the spokesman for everyone. And in that system, there's continuous adding of, so like now we have the electric, the utility providers helping them understand what does mobility do, what does mobility do with regards to electricity. We've been able to demonstrate with them that these assets we're bringing onto the roads actually can move crazy distances. So you as the utility provider, you have got to be able to be present so that when private sector, as crazy as they are, do the things they're going to do, guess what? You will be ready. Or move together with private sector so that every step that they are making, you're aware and you're not left behind. At the end of the day, we were able to understand what matters for businesses, why are they so eager for this. There's a lot of bankability. There's a lot of this idea of making sure that their costs are low. There's a lot of the other thing to remember is the country I come from doesn't have oil, so we are always importing it. The cost of the forex cost alone is crazy amounts. So how do you keep those costs low for businessmen? But at the same time, not taking away from what truly is important to the end user. The end user does not want to pay anything extra above it. And in some situations in Africa, the cost of mobility is at 65%. So if you can get it low for a businessman, then he's a very happy businessman. And then what matters for the government? So the government starts to understand that when you're going to build this change, you have to make sure that this change is lasts for a lifetime. So it's not about the government of today, but it's about the government that will come in 50, 60 years' time. What will that government find, and what will that legacy look like as you design it today? So that's my story, and that's my story on electric mobility and how I think I finally ended up here talking to you guys today. And with that, I end my presentation.